Welcome to Squirrel Snow and another night here speaking about very important matters for the times ahead. My name is Ender Black, and tonight is such a pleasure again because I have a very, very, very special guest for you, and her name is Caroline Corey. She's a prolific filmmaker and author. I just want to start off by asking you, what does the term upcoming protocols of galactic interaction sound to you? This is a term that I came up about a year ago, and I use it a lot to kind of explain what we're bound to experience, and it's upcoming protocols of galactic interaction. What is the first thing that comes to mind? Can you expand on that?
Hey, Ender. Yeah, thanks for having me. So the first thing that comes to mind is the opening of the pathways, the doorways between our galactic friends and ourselves. And I think that these doorways and these pathways have always been there, but more and more people are accepting and more open to this seamless communication. And but there are certain rules, if you will, you call it protocol, which I agree. I mean, there's certain things that need to happen in order to have this seamless, effortless communication and connection with the galactic frequencies. And, you know, this has to do with, first of all, aligning your energetic pathways, aligning your mind channels, aligning yourself to that frequency on all levels, energetic, spiritual, physiological, in order for this to happen. So does that make sense?
Yes, definitely. And well, I have to tell everybody here, KBOO audience here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, that I was very fortunate to find out about your work by watching your film Among Us, which was released in 2019. I watched it on Amazon Prime. But basically, just a summary of things that I'm aware you've done. You're a filmmaker and producer. And you did your first film, I believe, was E.T. Contact, They're Here, on 2017. Then Among Us on 2019. And then Superhuman on 2020. Very prolific. And also, you're an author and you've written many books, like, for example, The Visible and Invisible Worlds of God from 2004. God Among Us, Inside the Mind of the Divine Masters, 2006. The Divine Plan Beyond 2012, 2007. Yeah. So why didn't you share with us how, I'm sure you've talked about this before, but how did you get into this journey of writing about this very fascinating subject that for many of us, it's kind of crucial for the future of our planet or civilization, and how that started with your first book, I believe, The Visible and Invisible Worlds of God.
Yeah. So for me, it started when I was 5 years old. I had a very, very powerful experience where I suddenly came in contact with beings. They just showed up and we started communicating telepathically. And so I realized that I could see them, hear them, sense them, understand everything. And I kind of could see how the communication, like how telepathy works, basically. And they told me that if they were going to be with me my whole life, and if I wanted to continue this communication, that I had to kind of focus on what my mind was doing and ask for it, kind of focus and say, I want this. You know, it doesn't just happen. I mean, it happens naturally. But in order for you to have that connection, you have to kind of intend and ask for it. So that was my first encounter, my first kind of very powerful experience that got me on this journey, because that experience stayed in my mind, obviously, until, you know, in my adult life. But it kept me kind of asking the question, like, was I crazy? Like, what did I make it up? Is this for real? And more importantly, how did this happen? How was it possible for my mind, for me to see things that others couldn't see? And so because of that, I started, I got on the field of consciousness. So I realized that it was my consciousness. It wasn't just my physical brain, but there was a part of me that is non-visible, non-physical, that was effortlessly and seamlessly tapping into other information, much larger consciousness. And so, you know, I started to kind of work on all kinds of methodologies. So I developed methodologies for healing, for communication, for guidance. And I worked with hundreds of people. I trained hundreds of people around the world to do the same thing, to be able to tap into these other realities with discernment, with clarity. Like, how do you know that you are speaking to an extraterrestrial versus an angel or versus your own higher self? How do you know? And so that type of discernment is what helped me develop, you know, those types of methodologies. And working with hundreds of people, you get validation. You get validation after validation after validation. Then you go, okay, well, this method works, or this way of retrieving information works. So let's share it with the world. So this is when I started writing the books, you know, and doing lectures and things like that. And eventually I started working with scientists and verifying how consciousness was, you know, worked in remote viewing, in, you know, telekinesis and all kinds of stuff. And then it was time to make movies about it, because not everybody wants to read a book. Not everybody wants to, you know, listen and go to classes and stuff like that. So that's kind of how it all evolved from my personal journey to my teaching and developing and working with so many people on consciousness, then writing books, then the movies.
Yeah, that's amazing. I heard that story that you started off since you were very little. So you've had this passion for connecting to all the different realms outside Earth for a very long time. So you said something important. It's that it takes intent. It takes kind of like the intention, the action of asking for the communication. So could you expand on that? Maybe methodology or recommendations for people that would really love to connect to either, you know, people call them higher dimensions or our cosmic family or beings outside our biosphere who exist in the galaxy. But what would you recommend on how to tell what beings we're talking to and beings that are aligned with what we can call, I guess, love and light?
Yeah. So first of all, you have to, I mean, it's a little bit of a lengthy kind of conversation in terms of the details, but you have to understand that sometimes I work with people and they say, you know, well, I've been wanting to do this. I've been wanting to create, you know, relationships or money or career or whatever, but it doesn't seem to happen. It's like, it doesn't happen. And then I would say, well, did you ask for it specifically? And they would say, well, I kind of think about it all the time. Well, that's not the same thing. When you think about, you know, oh, I really, really want to create a relationship, but you don't specifically ask your higher self, the universe, for it. That, you know what I mean? It's a different, your words and your thoughts have a very specific frequency. Every single thought you emit has a different frequency. You can just feel it. When I say, I really wish I could be in a great relationship with someone, just notice how it feels when I say that versus when I say, I want to be in a relationship with someone. I want to create this reality for myself. Do you feel the difference? It's a whole different range of dynamics, and everything is frequency. Everything is energy. Even the words, the difference between asking and intending and wanting, every word has a different type of frequency. So that's the reason why there's a way to say it. So the formula that I create, and sometimes it's very funny. I would be looking at someone and I would see like their spirit family, you know, their guides, like standing right there. And they'll say, well, you know, I don't know how to communicate, you know, or they don't hear me or something. And the being is saying, well, she's not asking, you know. And so because it's about interference and intervening, they cannot step into your shoes and in your mind and make things happen for you. It's a kind of a collaboration. And so that's the reason why the first thing that I learned, like I just shared with you, is that you have to ask, and then that vibration gets matched by the other side. So the formula that I've created in terms of feeling intention and tone is to say, I ask and intend. I ask and intend. So it's kind of like I put it together and kind of imbued it, if you will, with energy, with certain frequency that that accelerates the manifestation of things. So when you say, I ask and intend to create a sacred space, I ask and intend to manifest, financial abundance in my life. I ask and intend, you know, it has that certain tone of clarity, precision, speed. And so that's kind of, I think, the first step is to know which formula, how to formulate your intention. The second thing, of course, like everybody else says, is a type of meditation. Now, there's all kinds of meditation. You know, everybody does this meditation and that meditation. How do you know which meditation to do? Because not all meditations are created equal. Some just calm you down. Others kind of help you release lower vibration. Others do, you know, this and that. Others make you expanded. So that's the reason why I've, you know, looked into, I've experienced all kinds of meditation to figure out which is the one that I need that will get me to my goal, that will, you know, to as quickly as possible. And that is when you tap directly into the source frequency, meaning your original essence, the original you, before you were ever a human, ever an ET, ever on any planet, you are an essence. And so when you tap back into that essence, it's almost like you plug yourself back into the operating system, you know, like the original operating system that has all the potential directly. You know, you're not tapping into the trees or the animal, you know, consciousness or whatever. You're going back directly to that point. So your mind channels and your brain start to adjust to that frequency directly. And that is another meditation. It's free on my website, by the way. It's called Connecting to Source. It's free on my website, on my YouTube channel. And it's very, I made it super short. It was very long before, but I made it super short, very concise, so that you can quickly get to that one alignment, that one frequency. And as you are saying, I ask and intend, I ask and intend. So I really hope people can just benefit from this and just give it a try and feel the difference of what happens when you do this protocol, when you're wanting something as opposed to, you know, other types of relaxing, let's say, meditation for different purposes.
Yeah, that was very clear. And I just want to remind the audience that your website is omniumuniverse.com, right?
Yeah, they can go to Omnium, O-M-N-I-U-M, universe.com or CarolineCorey.com for all these, you know, classes and they can, they'll see the link to my website, to my YouTube channel, which is obviously free. I have hundreds of meditations and including that one that are on my YouTube channel.
Okay, so based on everything that you said, and I think that your explanation is going to help a lot of people, can you expand on the concept of frequency of consciousness? I believe that, well, consciousness, as many scientists, even scientists that you had on your film Among Us, that they say that basically science, mainstream science, doesn't have a clear understanding of consciousness, what would be your personal explanation of frequency of consciousness and how people can manage that?
It's not so much a frequency of consciousness. You have to think of consciousness as being fundamental, meaning it's before anything, if there's a before and after. It's fundamental. You can look at it as a fundamental substance at the base of everything, the base of frequency, if you will. It's almost before frequency, if you will. You know, it's before frequency, before the physical world, before energy, before anything. It is that it is the original essence of all that is. So when you look at it this way, consciousness, again, if you look at it more as of an essence of some sort, a substance of some sort, from that emerges everything else, emerges ranges of frequency, emerges the physical world with their own ranges of frequencies and things like that. And so also emerges intelligent life. So you are a package of consciousness. You are a unit of consciousness. I am a unit of consciousness. Everybody else is a unit of consciousness. The physical world is a different type of consciousness. The animal kingdom is like different forms of consciousness within this much, much, much larger universal, all that is consciousness. So we have our own individual story, if you will, but always interacting, always part of this larger fabric, if you will. So when you look at it this way, you can't say one frequency. It's like you are a range of frequency. I am a range of frequency. You know, what connects us, you and I, are types of frequency. So it's like, it depends what you're looking at. You're looking at different frequencies. So the idea is to align your individual frequency with this larger frequency. That's the idea. And so what happens when you, the way we live, you know, this on this earth, you know, is we think we're separate. We think our physical body are a separate thing from the rest of, you know, which is the exact opposite of what I just explained. When you think you're separate, then, you know, like you are looking right and left, you're looking outside yourself to understand who you are. We're waiting for the government to tell us to disclose this and that. We're waiting for the medical establishment to tell us how to heal ourselves. We're waiting. So we're looking for outside sources to create our experience and our understanding of reality, because we think we're separate. Like, here I am, and here's outside of me is this, you know, doctor, and this outside of me is this scientist. And do you see what I mean? Which is the exact opposite of the truth. And so that is the problem. So when you look at things as one fabric, you then, all you have to do is focus on your individual frequency and just match it with the larger universal frequencies. And that's all you need. You basically become all that is in your little body, human body, if you will. And then you can retrieve the information directly for health or for whatever, you know, for knowledge or all kinds of different things. Does that make sense?
Yes. And it takes me, well, to this, just imagine somebody's asking you, oh, Caroline, what should I do? What would you recommend that I do so I can transcend this idea that my life is dependent on the physical reality around me? What would you tell them?
Again, to bring back the focus on the inner you. I think that's the point. We're not trained. Like, when we go to school, when we grow up as kids, nobody tells us any of this stuff. I mean, nobody, you know, tells us, you know, you have an inner essence. You can retrieve information on your own. You can tap into all that is. Nobody tells us any of that stuff. So by the time we're older, even in our 20, by the time we're 20, we're totally confused. We're totally programmed to think, you know, I need the doctor to tell me this and I need the scientist to tell me that. And so the idea is to try to bring that power back to you and to focus on your inner essence, who you really were at the origin of all of life, because you were part of the universe. You are the universe. And so, and when you go to that place, then you can tap into all of the information that is within the universe. I mean, that's the idea. And so again, I think, you know, I made it super simple. It looks simple, but it's packaged with this information. It's packaged with this intention and this understanding, just, you know, to just do that meditation, connecting to source. It connects you back to your source. And if you do this, you know, every day, you're kind of like training a muscle. You know, you've had bad habits for a long time, for years and years, and now you want to start training to do things right, if you will. So you have to be realistic and think that, you know, you have to retrain your brain to adjust to that frequency. And so if you do this every day, maybe morning and night in the beginning, but at least it's only 7 minutes long for 21 days, at least nonstop, because you want to create momentum. You want to like a training, like if you go to the gym one day a week and then you stop and then you go back again, you know, it's not the same as going every day, you know, but then if you go every day nonstop for 21 days and then you stop, it's not so bad because you've already, you know, there's muscle memory that you've created. So it's a little bit like that. I encourage people to do that meditation nonstop for 21 days, at least 30 days is better. And then create that momentum so that when you do need it, you can go back to it very quickly.
So creating a momentum so we can effectively do our best to transcend the idea that our lives are dependent on our physical reality around us, or specifically the society that has been all manufactured around us. So I just want to go back to the film Among Us. I've watched it twice so far, and it's fascinating. It has amazing information, and it's just so well done. And the way it's all put together is just wonderful. So can you share with us specific kind of like excellent moments that you had when you were doing that film, things that you think you would like to share with the audience?
I mean, there's a few moments. Let me think. I mean, I really liked the crop circle moment because it was totally, I mean, everything was also not rehearsed. I mean, it's even though it's a movie. And so everything was unexpected. Also the, you know, when we were in the lab and we were practicing, attempting to influence the DNA sample by bringing an entity, you know, so the idea was, can we affect something physiological when you come in contact with spirit? That was the experiment. And so, of course, you know, we worked with scientists, so we set up we use this DNA sample. And we take measurements of the electrical conductivity, the electricity, basically going through it for a long time, over a period of time. So we have a baseline. So we create kind of, we know where it's at, basically, for over a period of time. And then exactly when I summon spirit to be there, and exactly at that time, it jumps like crazy, like 400%. And then when we stop the experiment, it goes back down. The electrical conductivity goes back down. So, and then we do it again, and we do it again. So, and it happens again. So this is telling us that when there's a, you know, the spirit presence, it has a physiological effect, a measurable effect on a biological system. I mean, it's right there, you know. You can see it on a computer. You can see it in the whole measurement thing. And so that was pretty striking. I mean, that was the first time the scientists hadn't wasn't expecting. I remember his reaction. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we all saw his reaction.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, that is a, oh yeah, it's a robust effect. Like he was like, how did that work? How did that happen? And we did it again over and over. And even I remember the crew were shocked that this, because again, there's no rehearsal. It just kind of happened. And we did it over and over. And also when we're making a film, you know, you have like cameras and cables and equipment and, you know, all kinds of interference. And yet, you know, we're able to do these things. So I think that was pretty validating and pretty striking. Among other things, but that's the one that comes to mind right now.
Yeah, I think it's funny that you mentioned that moment, because that is one of the moments that I clearly remember from the film, because you can tell that it was so honest and spontaneous, and it looks so truthful. Okay, so I want to share with you that part of what I do on my radio show, part of what I talk about with everyone I know, is the idea that the animals, I call them animal beings, kind of as a reminder that they are beings like ourselves, although very different, there are beings like ourselves. That's one of my main personal beliefs. For me, animals, all animals are sentient. And the word sentience, funnily enough, comes from the Latin word or verb to feel. Even the word animal itself derives from the Latin word anima, which is removing one letter, the L, which means literally soul and spirit. So personally, and part of my discourse is that the animal beings are incredibly valuable as we are for a global ecosystem of life, existence, and consciousness. Can you give us your perspective on the value of the animal beings?
I just adore animals. It's a type of consciousness that is here. Actually, they're part of the earth consciousness. So they play an extremely important role in the health of the planet itself. That's the first role that they play. So that's why we have different types of animals, those that kind of walk on four-legged ones, those who fly, you know. So they are working with the pulse and the breathing of the planet itself, calibrating all kinds of things. Birds work with the magnetic field of the planet. And so there's an exchange between the consciousness of the planet herself and the different types of animals and species. It's almost like there's an exchange of how to maintain the chemistry, the electromagnetic field, the breathing, the pulsation of the planet, and vice versa. And so that's the first role they play. But also, of course, on another level, they're interacting with us. And they're adding to our understanding. It's kind of like they're the bridge between us and nature itself, you see. And so because of that, they also play an important role for human evolution and consciousness. And so the fact that there is a discord between or the inability to communicate with animals. I mean, most people cannot. I can, you can, I'm sure.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Few people can. but there are, I'm talking about the majority of humans mm-hmm. cannot communicate with even their pets, you know, that they live with. You know, because of that, it presents a challenge. And so it forces you to elevate your consciousness. It forces you to understand and find ways, because you're creating a bond, bonding with these animals, but then there's no communication. So it forces you to get past your, you know, ego-based way of thinking. And then, especially if we have a pet that becomes sick or this or that. So in that sense, they're also helping us evolve, you know, stretch the boundaries of understanding how communication should work, between the different species. So I really think they play a huge, huge role, you know, in both directions.
Yeah, I completely agree. Based on my own personal experience, yeah, animal beings have an incredible value. And to higher dimensional societies that I'm familiar with, animal beings are kind of the treasure and the beings that actually human identities learn from, which is kind of mind-blowing for our society. So do you have, I know this is kind of a silly question that we could ask anybody, but do you have a favorite animal being that, you know, elephant, whale, cat, dog, a specific species that you feel a real connection with?
Well, I think really all of them. I love elephants. I love all kinds of animals. But of course, I mean, I'm partial, maybe like everyone else. I mean, I did have a dog that died actually last year. And it was ridiculous. I mean, she was like a human. I mean, I heard and everything she said, she could hear me and understand me. I'm already telepathic, but it was so clear the way she behaved and our communication and connection was incredible. And so because of that, you know, I'm kind of partial to dogs, but I still feel a connection to all kinds of animals. Like, you know, for some reason, I love elephants. I don't know why. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a hard question. It's more of a general feel for animals. I don't know. What about you? What is your favorite animal?
Well, I think I completely agree with you. I have a few favorite animals, but I do feel this connection every day. Every time I go outside, I just connect with whatever animals in front of me, usually birds and squirrels. We have tons of squirrels here. And actually, this show is called Squirrel Snow. Oh. And it's because, yes, Squirrel Snow, because, basically, I had an experience where I had to rehab a baby squirrel into health. But that experience, although very cute, and it sounds very cute for the majority of people, actually, it opened up a pathway for me that effectively changed my life for the better. It really, I could see this connection to Mother Earth, to these ecosystems, and that pathway was open through the squirrel. And that's just my experience with animal beings the past few years. And I do have an enormous love and appreciation for all of them. I can communicate with all of them. I understand them. I mean, as you know, and as many other animal people would know, well, they don't speak words. It's telepathic. It's imagery, imagery and emotions and a lot of bodily actions. But yes, I basically love all of them. And it takes me back to another question for you. And it's based on your vast experience dealing with people from outside our sphere of influence here. What do you think higher dimensional human identities would think of animal beings?
I mean, I think they if they are higher dimensional, they have a higher level of consciousness. They would say what I just said in the sense that, you know, they can see the bigger picture. They can see the bigger story that, you know, there is no, they're here on a purpose. It's not, you know, it's not for us to just play around with and do what we want. It's they're playing a very important role. And they see, I mean, I think they would say that, you know, it is part of the evolution of the planet and humanity. That's what I think they would say.
Yes. Well, I want to tell you that.
And once you're telepathic, I was saying that, you know, when I was, since I was five, I've been telepathic. So, you know, so once you're telepathic, if you're telepathic, like whether it's another person or another dog or, you know, it's the same process. So that's why, it's a difficult kind of, it's a difficult training because, you know, you don't know if you're making things up and stuff like that. But once you kind of understand how it works, like you're saying, it's not necessarily words. Well, I mean, it is connected to words, obviously. But once you know how it works and you have validation, you just kind of keep at it and then you can communicate with animals as well.
Yes. I want to share with you that part of what I do on this show, Squirrels Know, is, of course, talk about higher dimensional beings, upcoming protocols of galactic interaction, all this type of fascinating subjects for the times ahead. But also, it's about kind of reminding people or introducing people to the understanding that Native American tribes in North America, South America, and I'm sure other people throughout the world, maybe Aboriginals, maybe ancient Europe, ancient Asia, they specifically Native America, they've had an understanding of what they call star people for 1,000 years, for forever. It's been common knowledge for the entire history of Native America, either in North America or the Inca in South America, Maya, Aztecs. It was kind of it was a given that there was life outside Earth, that there were planets and that there were star people. Do you have any knowledge or any opinion about what the ancients in North America call star people? We know what they meant, but do you have any knowledge about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, humans aren't all from here. And so I think also at one point, beings not only have visited, but were literally inhabiting the earth. And I feel like this was part of the agreement, kind of interplanetary agreement, for different beings to visit different planets and kind of hang out for a period to help the local species evolve one way or another. And we see a lot of evidence of that. I mean, you know, I'm on the show, a regular on the show Ancient Aliens on mm-hmm. History Channel. And there's a lot of, it's evidence that comes. You can do your own research as well. That's what the show is based on, is that, you know, from ancient times, there's evidence, there's real archaeological, all kinds of evidence that there were non-human beings inhabiting the earth. And so I'm 100% convinced that that is the case. And it's different now. You know, I think things have changed with our current civilization, but I definitely agree that that is the case.
Yes, it's been a journey to rediscover the fact that this knowledge that seems very cutting edge or very new or definitely off mainstream has been part of ancient human cultures here for years before what we call civilization and technology. And they just knew, and they had charts, like the Incas and the Maya, they had charts with planets, and they talked about this stuff without telescopes. And I think other people throughout the world did too. So I just want to change the subject to, I'm sure you're familiar with this. I've heard theories from different people about crystal children and rainbow children, and who they really are, and what that means, really. Maybe everybody has that inside themselves, and it's more active during these days. I've had a few people call me that, and call other people that. What are your thoughts on that, on crystal children and rainbow children? Is that has any validity to you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know about the exact titles, you know, crystal versus rainbow versus, indigo. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are all kinds of children that are born now equipped already with a different type of DNA. And so because of that, it's kind of an upgraded version or a different type of hybrid version that allows them to function differently. So that's why some of them are extremely sensitive. Others have harder time communicating, but they're doing other stuff energetically. A lot of them, if you hear them speak, it's incredible. I mean, I know 7-year-olds who they talk like an adult, like they know things that they should know technically, you know what I mean? They have visions, they remember their past life so clearly, and they're very sure about it, you can't tell them, no, it didn't happen, because they'll say, yes, I know it did. You can't tell me otherwise. And so it's fascinating to hear them speak even. And so when I was filming, when I was filming the last, I think it was even the, in my movie Superhuman, which I think everybody should watch.
Yeah, I've watched it. It's on Amazon Prime. People, go and watch it. Please continue.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know what it shows, the abilities that we can do, which has to do with this new upgraded DNA. So people need to watch it. But going back to the children, so the kids, for example, in the UK, we were doing the blindfold training, which it was, it's like mind blowing. But other than that, I didn't include that much in that movie because the subject was more about the you know, the mind over matter thing. Mm-hmm. But some of the interviews we've conducted with these kids was mind-blowing. So they talk about their 7-year-old, 9-year-old, 11-year-old, they talk about energy and healing and consciousness in ways that even adults don't even talk about. And so you know, that is so mind-blowing, and it's so refreshing to hear children so effortlessly talk about that they know for a fact that you know, there are other beings, other intelligences, that they can see them and they remember, they can describe another planet they lived on with detail. And it doesn't matter. People will say, oh, children make up stuff. Yeah, it's true in general. But you can tell, like you can tell that this kid is sincere. Like they are talking from their heart, and they're talking about things that's very important to them. Like one of them I remember was telling me how he meets Jesus all the time. I say, well, is it in a dream, or are you just imagining things, or how do you know? And he would say, well, I know because he tells me things and I hear him and I see him. And so again, for all the skeptics out there, please don't dismiss this, because if you don't have that experience, you wouldn't know. I have this experience. So I can tell you, it took me a long time to make sure that I wasn't making it up and crazy and this and that. But then once you have validation of all sorts of experiences, you know what you know, and nobody can tell you otherwise. So, I mean, yeah, it's so refreshing to have that new generation be on Earth at this time. It's very hopeful.
Yeah, this takes me back to an ancient Native American saying, very simple, children are the true human beings.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, you've heard it, right?
Yeah.
And basically, you know, once this society, which we could, you know, we could debate, we could talk hours about how manufactured it seems that it is, that it, well, you know, it creates this kind of compression or oppression on the identity. And then, you know, corruption starts and, you know, people tend to lose that which they were when they were very little. So I just want to share that with you and people in general, how children are the true human beings. So if they're saying stuff that sounds deep, stop and pay attention.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the next point is maybe a little bit political, but many people agree, despite what others might think, that planet Earth is a very primitive planet with great potential, yet very primitive, even barbaric at times. So how would a star nation successfully reach out, given our state of separation and quiet disarray?
Say that again. How does what a nation?
How would a star nation, successfully reach out, given our state of separation and quiet disarray?
I think they have been reaching out. I think they're trying their best. You know, they're trying to infiltrate through all kinds of visitations, all kinds of downloads, all kinds of sightings. I mean, they're really trying very hard. I think the problem is not them. I think it's the humans, you know. I mean, it's really in your face. Like everybody, that's why I tell my story when I was 5 years old, because our pathway, our channels of communication with the other side are open all the time. It's like, it's right there. It's like, it's a radio station that's always on. The fact that you are not tuning into that radio station and you can't listen what's on that radio doesn't mean it's not there. All you have to do is tune in. It's just like turn the dial to that frequency and you will hear. And so that's what I'm saying. They are present in all kinds of ways and all kinds of dimensions and, you know, tactics. And we are not turning the dial. That's all.
Yeah, I just wanted that validation. I think a lot of people assume that a Star Nation or like the only way that they would be able to interact would be by landing on spaceships all together. And the fact is that they've been interacting with people on a one-on-one basis for a long time. So interaction has been happening, you know, of course, that's kind of what we've been talking about and what your films are about, definitely among us. So the other point, this is, I'm sure you've heard, and I think a lot of people love playing around with this term, but let's talk about a galactic union, what people call Galactic Federation, or maybe one of many, that a galactic union that seeks to protect life forms and make sure planets are not destroyed. So there are many names for these, what I'm certain it is a heavenly, celestial, and magnificent galactic super alliance. What, if you have any opinion or knowledge about this particular subject, what are your thoughts about that, about having the existence of a galactic super alliance or a galactic federation able to do whatever they can to make sure planets are not destroyed and life is protected?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're working, whether we like it or not, whether we know it or not, understand it or not, tuning in or not, you know, that there are beings that are already doing their job, if you will, you know. And I think there are some human-like forms that are part of it already, you know, the more advanced ones. So I think it's definitely part of where humanity is going. Again, it's the same thing as what I just said earlier. I think I agree that this federation, this organization, this, you know, intelligence is definitely ushering humanity in the background, behind the veils, again, because humans don't ask, because they're not ready, because they're looking elsewhere, because they're not tuning in. They are doing the job. And the way I know this for a fact is that this planet has gone in such the wrong direction for so many years, you know, with all the nuclear waste that we've accumulated, with all the nuclear weapons and all, you know, the way it's been accumulating self-destructive patterns. It should have blown up a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like on all levels of society, there's destruction. You know, socially, we're separate. You know, this guy is better than that guy. This color is better than that color. You know, this is more powerful than this. Money rules. I mean, come on. This society is broken, you know? And so the consciousness of this society has been broken for many, many years. And this is not the type of consciousness that preserves the health of a planet. And so the fact that we, and I'm, of course, I'm talking in general terms. So the fact that we're still where we are and we're still going, thriving in some sense, you know, in some tiny little areas here and there, it is because we're being assisted. It is because we're part of the Galactic Federation without even knowing it. That's my two cents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would you say to the most skeptic person in the world right now? How would you try to get through to them?
I would say, what do you have to lose? You know, more than ever before, there is so much, especially with the AI right now and everything else. There is so much misinformation, disinformation, even it's like in your face, you know, this whole thing that's happening, you know, with this pandemic thing, you know, this government officials tell you one thing and then they tell you something else and then they point fingers and it does this and it does that and you should do this. And it is so confusing and it's so politically directed or whatever it is. I'm not trying to make a political statement here, but what I'm saying is reality, society is giving us so many confusing and misleading information. And so I think the idea, excuse me, is at this point, it's an opportunity for you to take the power back, your power back, and decide for yourself. Because I think people are skeptics because they're still influenced by, you know, all this information, disinformation being thrown at them. It's very confusing. Even people who believe in a certain thing are starting to not believe. And so that's what I would say. I would say before you jump to conclusions one way or another about anything, about any subject, about, you know, whether it's the pandemic or UFOs or extraterrestrials or anything at all, you can read stuff all you want. You can listen to other people, but then you got to stop. You got to bring the power back to you. Look inside yourself. Really, really within your heart, feel your truth. I think that's the only way you can really know the truth and how you should create your reality. So that's what I would say.
Wonderful. And we all know that you are a very accomplished telepath and you have plenty of experience communicating with our fellow beings from the higher dimensions. And can you share with us if you had any, and if you're comfortable with sharing an experience that was physical that you went through, and if you would like to share that?
So there's quite a few, but there's actually plenty of evidence, you know. When you're skeptic, you're on the fence, it's okay. But if you open, if you kind of switch from being I'm a skeptic, therefore everything else doesn't exist, from being skeptic, healthy skepticism is good, to being open to listening, then you start to see evidence of certain things one way or another, or at least look at someone else's perspective. And so the same for me, like when you ask about something physical, if you're talking about an interaction with an actual extraterrestrial or an actual being, is that what you're asking? I mean,
yes. And the physical that you remember touching, or you remember that actually happened in the physical world.
Well, a couple of things, but one of them, I remember a long time ago, I was in Las Vegas, actually, of all places. And in like a lobby of a casino, actually. And then I turned around, very close to me was two of them, very, very, very tall, very weird looking beings that had some sort of like a robe or something. And they just looked very strange. Their skin was very white, but like bizarre. And their hair was kind of not so much like hair. It was kind of, anyway, so, and they were with other humans. And so I had to do like a double take, because the first, I remember thought was, oh, these are like characters from some show, you know, because you're in Las Vegas, you're like, oh, you know, they're on stilts or something or whatever. And it's like a costume. But then it was like a double take. I looked again, I was like, no, this is their skin. This is because they were pretty close. And so I realized, so I start to focus on them, like look really, really careful. I'm like, no, this is not makeup. This is real hair and this is real whatever. And so I started thinking, are you what I think you are, you know? And I got a telepathic message back, literally like overcame my whole brain. It's like I was sucked into their brain. And they were like, yes. And they were kind of making fun of me, like kind of saying like, yeah, you know, we are, but you're not going to be able to like prove it or something, you know, like that sort of kind of energy. And so they were so close to me that I know for a fact they were in physical form. They were very real. It wasn't some costume. It wasn't some character. I mean, I could literally touch them. So I know for a fact that, and that, I mean, that was one very, very close contact with those beings.
Well, that's fascinating. It's been a great conversation. And I thank you so much for participating, for giving us your ideas, thoughts, recommendations, and basically introducing you to many in the audience who don't know about your work, your books, and your films. One very last, very short point, and it's, if you could speak to our Galactic Federation now, and if you were on speakerphone to all fleets stationed in the system, what would you tell them?
Keep it up, persevere. Because I think humans are still very slow, and I feel very grateful for their presence and their support, but I can feel their discouragement sometimes. So I would just say persevere. It's not over. We are on the right track, and you know, just full of gratitude to everything they're doing.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I also would like to,
yes.
I hope you liked it. I also wanted to encourage people to go to superhumanfilm.com or watch the movie Superhuman, The Invisible Made Visible on Amazon Prime, because I feel like it will help so many of your listeners to kind of remember like their own powers. And I think it will bring a very powerful awakening as well.
Great. So there you have it, people. Go and watch Superhuman, The Invisible Made Visible. Thank you, Caroline. It's been a great pleasure. I'm really glad to have you here on Squirrel Snow.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Take care.
All right. Take care.